Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. We finish strong with full bellies. Thanks to our friends at Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, finest barbecue in the world. There's a reason why all the baseball teams, the rock bands, well, the performers of any kind that come through town, make sure they stop by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue because it is out of this world. Ribs, beans, the cowboy caviar was really good. I've never had that before. That's great to know. Fries, out of this world, best fries in Kansas City. They win that. It is absolutely awesome. Thank you to the our friends at Joe's Kansas City, three locations. 119th and Stringline Road in Olathe, 117th and Row in Leawood, and then the original where everybody, if you have not been there yet, if you grew up on Joe's out south, make sure you make the pilgrimage to the gas station at 47th and Mission, the absolute mecca of all barbecue. And don't forget about the Kansas City Barbecue Store. They're wonderful barbecue location, sauces, rubs from all over the country, grills, smokers, charcoal, everything you need to grill or smoke meat like a pro is at the Kansas City Barbecue Store. That's right across the parking lot from the Joe's at 119th and Stringline Road. I want to talk a little basketball, and I'm going to talk some football as well, as Kyle Kensing is with us here on our Sprint Guest Line from Athlon Sports. Writer and editor at Athlon Sports is with us. Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm now very hungry for some barbecue after hearing that pitch.
Well, the good news is, wonderful segue there by you, Kyle. JoesKC.com, you can have it sent anywhere in the country. They're incredible barbecue. They do it like no one else. So I would invite you to go there. In fact, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to send you some. How's that sound?
That sounds excellent.
I have
a KC style in Southern California.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I have that kind of juice with the people at Joe's. And they love to, send barbecue, great barbecue to anyone. So when we get done, don't hang up. I'll make sure Rob's got an address, and we'll send you some barbecue. How's that sound?
That sounds pretty excellent.
All right, good deal. You didn't know you were going to hit the jackpot like this today, did you?
I really didn't know, but I'm glad I did.
Yeah, very good. All right, Kyle, let me ask you. You've got your way too early top 25. I love these during the offseason. And in college basketball time, we recently had the deadline come for who was going to stay in the draft and who was going to come back. KU got Azubuike back. You've still got KU number one. Duke's got all kinds of talent. And you don't have them. Some people have KU number one, but KU has kind of settled in to kind of the consensus pick. Why with such a young backcourt, which a lot of times has hurt teams, is KU still the top team in your mind?
Yeah, right at the end of the NCAA tournament, I had done something similar before the NBA draft deadline had come up, and at the time, Villanova was obviously a clear number one. If they had returned everybody, I think that they would have been the only team that would have potentially contended with KU for that spot. But for my money, Kansas is a clear number one. I don't think that you can really go anywhere else because Duke, you always have that sort of unknown variable when you're bringing in a lot of blue chip talent. You know, sometimes you can be Duke in 2015 when they had Justice Winslow and Jahlil Okafor, but then sometimes you can be at Kentucky in 2013, which, lost to Robert Morris in the NIT. So there's so much chaos when you're talking about building around just blue chip young talent. With Kansas, you bring back so much experienced veteran talent that I think you can build around some of those young guards. And when you talk about the young guards, the five stars that are coming in, like Devin Dotson, Quinn Grimes, they're going to be joining a really veteran lineup. And I think that really eases the transition. And for me, this makes Kansas a clear number one, and I think the best Kansas team since 08.
Yeah, the Lawsons, transferring in the Black Charlie Black, is it just Black? The point guard from Cal, Charlie Moore. That's what I don't know where I was getting. I guess maybe it was Will Blackwell who played at Syracuse or something. But anyway, it's not just youth; it's everybody being new. We have confidence that Bill Self can put together because while he does have some guys that are upper, been around college basketball, this is, four of the five leading scorers are gone. Self is one of the guys that in your mind has proven that he can rework the team and put it all together. Do you think along that, obviously you do because you've got him number one, but along the way, will there be growing pains? Is it like, hey, they're number one, They're probably going to fall out of that spot as they go through some growing pains. But by the end of the year, it all comes together and they're number one? Or you think they're the kind of the wire-to-wire number one?
I could see them being the wire-to-wire kind of number one. The only reason they wouldn't is the Big 12 is going to be pretty phenomenal next season. I think it'll probably be the best conference, with the possible exception of the SEC. It may be the ACC, but the thing with the ACC is when you play down teams in the ACC, they're really down. In the Big 12, Iowa State's going to be coming back strong, bringing in some transfer talent. I think West Virginia is legit around the top 10. TCU, as a fully healthy team, I think is capable of being a top 10 team. I think Kansas State is going to be excellent next year. So I think the depth of the conference is going to maybe elicit some growing pains, maybe not Kansas out of the number one spot at some point. But really, that's the only reason I could see that being the case. And I think that that will actually be pretty integral in terms of getting them ready for an NCAA tournament run, just having to face that week-in, week-out sort of grinder in the conference.
Does the lack of three-point shooting, if they're not going to deliver on this kind of potential, and I'm not going to say win the championship because in a single elimination tournament, that's too much. I mean, but have a very good tournament run, have a great regular season. If it doesn't end up being that kind of year, is it because they don't have enough shooting? I mean, they're really going from the team that made the most threes in Kansas history to a team that's going to really maybe struggle to knock down the three.
Yeah, that's the big question, Mark, because you do look at last year's team, and the three-point shot being such a huge catalyst for them getting to the Final Four. But at the same time, I think that you can kind of glean some optimism from that, because Malik Newman was a guy who, as far as the KenPom metrics go, was really just a mid-level role player for most of the season. He really kind of finds his shot there towards the end of the season, shoots Kansas into the Final Four with that great game against Duke. So it's been kind of proven that somebody can step up and take over that role late in the season. I would be interested to see if maybe one of the freshmen, in particular Grimes, if he's able to come in and maybe deliver some of that three-point shooting that they're going to be missing, with Graham leaving and Newman leaving.
Tell me, you mentioned the Big 12. There are three other teams in your top 25 from the Big 12. West Virginia at 8, K-State at 13, TCU at 17. In particular, the Cats. They're certainly very excited about bringing back basically their whole team, adding a big JC rebounder to the mix. What do you think the upside is on Bruce Weber's squad?
Yeah, that's a team that just plays fantastic defense. And I think by the end of the season last year, they had really sort of figured it out offensively for a style that that complements how well they play on the defensive side of the ball. And that's why they're able to make that run in the NCAA tournament. Now, not seeing Virginia in the second round certainly helped that case. That's not something you can bank on a lot as an 8 seed. But I think that they really kind of found their identity there towards the end of the season. And it really started with the matchup against Oklahoma in January. When you saw Brown kind of shut down Trae Young, which nobody at that point had really done. You know, Young had some games where he turned the ball over a lot, but that was the first time that you saw Young kind of struggle to get to the basket and find his shot. And I think that's what makes this K-State team so good, is the fact that they can pull more talented teams into that kind of 56-50 rock fight. It's almost like a maybe less athletic version of West Virginia, not necessarily with the press, but with more of an aggressive kind of half-court style.
Are you surprised at what a Bruce Weber team looks like? You know, he used to be known as the motion offense guy, and what his K-State teams have become is not what he was known as earlier in his career.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. And going back to West Virginia, I almost wonder if some of it's kind of the lingering influence of Bob Huggins and Frank Martin having kind of turned that program in that direction in the 2000s, and Weber kind of inheriting that style. You know, it's almost like that's how you have to win or how you have to play if you're at K-State, because you're not necessarily going to be able to recruit guys to play a high-flying style. You know, it's not like when he was at Illinois, where you've got Peoria Emanuel down there to pull, you know, five-star prospects out of. You have to play that kind of more methodical style, and I think he's kind of figured that out a little bit.
Yeah, it is. I think just shows his overall basketball acumen that he can kind of adjust and change the way he goes about doing things. SEC-wise, Tennessee at number 7, Auburn at 11, Kentucky at 15, Mississippi State at 19. Missouri doesn't make the list. I'm curious, were they close to making the list?
Yeah, Missouri was one right outside. And for the same reason that I have Kentucky at 15, which is a lot lower than a lot of these rankings have them right now, there's a little bit of that hesitance in terms of roster turnover and kind of building around young guys. I really like Konzo Martin a lot, actually for the same reason that I like K-State with Weber right now, is he's just a really great defensive-minded coach, and I think that if his young talent kind of figures it out what he wants to do, then they'll be right in that mix. But the SEC is so – it's both top-heavy and deep. It manages to kind of check off both those boxes. And I think that that's going to be a challenge for a team like Missouri to kind of find, you know, where it's sitting in that conference when you've got – Tennessee looks like a legit Final Four team, returning everybody from last season. I think Auburn's going to be excellent again. And Kentucky's such an X factor because that's the kind of team that can either, you know, be playing for its tournament lives or playing for the Final Four, you know, just as likely. And if they get Reed Travis, the transfer from Stanford, then I think that they kind of jump into that top eight mix or so. So it's there's just a lot of depth, and it's difficult to kind of slot a team in when you're not really sure what their identity is going to be.
Are you surprised at where Auburn is? I mean, when the FBI, and listen, we can talk about Kansas's name being prominently mentioned in that FBI investigation as well, but Bruce Pearl's history, I mean, having a show cause put on him after his time at Tennessee, Chuck Person being one of the guys that was brought in, one of the four assistant coaches that are facing trial, are you surprised at one, what Auburn was able to do last year with all that hanging over its head and where the program currently sits, or is there a big market correction coming here very soon for that school?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I do feel like a lot of it hinges on the FBI investigation. And when Auburn was one of those programs that was implicated, I was a bit shocked that there wasn't a little bit more conversation about that, given the fact that Pearl had been hit with that show cause at Tennessee. And Auburn's such an interesting program in that if you look at its history in basically the post-Charles Barkley era, they've typically had one team every, like, 10 years or so that kind of comes out of nowhere, exceeds expectations, gets a top four seed in the NCAA tournament, doesn't really do anything with it, and then ends up kind of backsliding a little bit. I think of, I want to say it was 98 and 2003 were two instances of that. But now I think they return a little bit more talent. It's not a team that's particularly good in the post, but if they're able to shoot the ball well enough next season, I feel like they can maintain that level. And that's kind of the style that Bruce Pearl likes to roll with. But I am kind of surprised that his name doesn't get a little bit more mentioned just because of the backstory. I tend to think if it had been Houston and Kelvin Sampson, people would be talking about it a lot more, but I could be wrong. That's just speculation on my part.
Yeah, I just, you know, to me, and we are just what? I mean, if we see another big wave of stories about, you know, if the FBI releases some more stuff, then maybe all bets are off and we're talking about, you know, the end of a program, right? I mean, where is your vibe right now on how much more is still to come from the FBI? I recognize you're not a federal investigator, so maybe you have some sources. I don't want to discount what you might know, but just you're having the pulse of college basketball. Do you feel like there's a lot more to come? And if there isn't more to come, does it feel like we kind of got overhyped on what was supposed to be happening?
Yeah, it definitely feels like an instance of overhype, just based on the fact that now we're kind of coming up on about 4.5 months, or I should say 3.5 months, of really hearing no new developments. The last thing was the ESPN.com story about Sean Miller on a wiretap that was then retracted and then unretracted and just a whole big mess going on with that situation. And I feel like the fact that there's been no follow-up of any kind, not even anything substantial, but just kind of zero discussion about it, suggests that maybe this was, you know, a whole lot of noise with not a lot of any substance. Because you look now at how some of these programs have rebounded. You know, USC is a top 20 recruiting class coming in. Arizona just extended Sean Miller and has started to pick up its recruiting class again. I feel like there's, you know, maybe not a whole lot that's still to come. I could be wrong because it came out of left field at the time in September, but so much of this was predicated, one, on Christian Dawkins, a guy who had a pretty sketchy background to begin with, and two, there was so much news that was trickling out for, you know, a pretty consistent 4 months to just go completely silent, I think might signal that we're nearing the end of this.
All right, I want to ask you, and we're talking to Kyle Kensing from Athlon Sports. You write a lot about the Pac-12 football in particular. Is the Pac-12, and you mentioned you're out in California, it's a good reason too. Is the Pac-12, we've heard about their TV network problems and everything. Are they going to get back to where they are challenging for national champions? Because they seem to have taken a definitive step back. You know, a couple of years ago, and listen, you're about as good as your last season, it seems like, by most people's measurements these days. But you know, the Big 12 was dead and buried a couple of years ago. It's bounced back with some appearances in the playoffs. But the Pac-12 seems to have infighting, people questioning where they are financially with their television networks, and you know, just some teams that haven't really been that great. I mean, where is Pac-12 football right now?
Yeah, I think this upcoming season, the Pac-12 is, in football, it's still kind of up in the air a little bit. A lot's going to be answered week one because you've got Washington, which is the clear college football playoff contender out of that league, playing Auburn in what's essentially a road game. I think if they win that one, Washington will start getting some buzz as a top five team, and I think we'll have a pretty strong case for the college football playoff because they avoid USC. They go to Utah, which is a challenging game, but they get Stanford at home. I think realistically Washington could go 12-0, and if nobody else in the conference really delivers, as long as you've got that one team contending for the national championship, that kind of seems to set the national narrative. Because even just 2 years ago, Stanford missed the college football playoff with 11 wins and two losses. That was a great team with a Heisman candidate. The conference at that time was pretty deep. I believe that their only bowl loss was when Oregon blew that huge lead to TCU. So the conference, you know, 2 years ago looked like one of the best in the country, but because they didn't have a playoff team, it was sort of discredited a little bit. So I think Washington will get back in that mix. The league as a whole isn't as strong as it's been in recent years, but I think that that's going to start to swing the other way with Chip Kelly at UCLA now able to get them over the hump from what Jim Mora was doing in terms of bringing in elite-level prospects that were under-delivering. I think Kevin Sumlin will get Arizona going. As far as Oregon State and Arizona State, those two are a little more up in the air. But you've got consistent programs in Stanford and Utah, so I think that the Pac-12 is going to bounce back. And as far as the TV revenue, right now that's all predicated on linear cable. And it's difficult to project what the future holds. But the Pac-12 network has, I think, the best situation for maybe moving to a Netflix or WWE network kind of model, where they can, because they're not tied to an ESPN or a Fox with that Tier 3 package, if they decided to, they would have the mobility to take it all online and just have an a la carte package just for fans without cable. So I think that that's something that isn't really factored in right now into the TV distribution rights that, you know, could help the conference long term, you know, as far as those broadcasting deals go.
We brought on a gentleman who was speculating that Arizona and Arizona State could be ripe for the picking for the Big 12. Full disclosure, he lives in Dallas. You know, you're out there in Pac-12 country. Do you think that there's any chance that the Arizona schools or any other school in the Pac-12 would look around at a different league?
I don't want to say never because, you know, never say never, but I would say it's pretty close to never. You know, when those two schools joined the Pac-8 from the WAC back in the early 80s, part of that was to bolster the academic profile of both schools because so much of it goes just beyond the athletics. You know, there's resource sharing with the universities within conferences. And ASU and U of A have both really bolstered their academic profile as a result of being associated with schools like Cal and Stanford and USC. Travel's much easier. Both schools have huge alumni bases in both the Bay Area and Los Angeles and in the San Diego area, which isn't far from L.A. So they're really culturally just Pac-12 schools. And, you know, as far as the Big 12, I know that there was the issue of the grant of rights not expanding if they added new members. I don't know if that would change if that's, you know, Arizona and Arizona State as opposed to Cincinnati and BYU. But that might still be a sticking point because I don't know that those are necessarily programs in college football that move the needle enough to warrant, you know, paying out an extra $40 million per school. So really, I don't see any scenario in which that happens unless the Pac-12 were to somehow just completely dissolve.
All right, we're talking to Kyle Kinzing from Athlon Sports here in the program. Time for my Final Four, Kyle. Four quickies. You just tell me the first thing that pops into your mind. Our Final Four brought to you by Mosquito Squad. Go to kansascity.mosquitosquad.com or call 877-MO-SQUAD to protect your family, friends, pets from the bugs that bite. First off, more successful in their tenure when it's all said and done. Chris Peterson at Washington or Chip Kelly at UCLA?
Chris Peterson at Washington. He is at the preeminent program in the Pacific Northwest and already has them going. So I think the head start's going to help him.
Okay. All right. More successful here moving forward, Ben Howland at Mississippi State or Konzo Martin at Mizzou?
Whew, that's a good one because I like both coaches, but I'm going to lean Konzo Martin at Missouri. I'm a big Ben Howland supporter, just haven't seen what he did at Northern Arizona and UCLA. Mississippi State's such a hard place to recruit to. That Missouri, I think you have that edge, and I think that Konzo is going to be able to get more elite-level talent at Missouri than Howland will at Mississippi State.
All right, Sam Darnold just left Pac-12 country. Who will be a better pro quarterback when it's all said and done, Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen?
Josh Rosen. I think his game translates to the pros more, and I think he's in a better situation in Arizona than Darnold is in New York, especially the Jets. which seemed to be a cursed franchise. But I really love Rosen's game, and I think the only reason that he won't excel in the NFL is the fact that he's been a little injury-prone. If he stays healthy, I think he's going to be an elite-level Hall of Fame-caliber quarterback.
Wow, Hall of Fame. Very, very cool.
Yeah, I'm really high on him. I think he's fantastic. He sees the field really well. He's mobile. He's smart, and his teammates really loved him. And, you know, I think they rally around a guy like him.
Okay, very good. And finally, Herm Edwards will or will not succeed at Arizona State?
Will not. I thought that was a really ponderous hire. I thought Todd Graham was doing close to as well as you're ever going to do at ASU, considering that the local talent pool isn't as deep as Texas or Southern California, which you have to go into to recruit at the Arizona schools. The fact that he was winning, you know, pretty much every season with one exception, I was shocked that they deviated away from him. And Herm Edwards, the fact he has no college football coaching background and this whole CEO thing, I think is destined to fail. They already lost their offensive and defensive coordinator within weeks of making that hire. I just don't see it working long term. They might be okay this year, but big picture, I can't see it working.
Yeah, that's kind of where most of us are. Kyle, great stuff. I really appreciate it. Again, don't hang up. Get some information and get you some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Thanks for the time, my friend.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for the barbecue.
Yeah, you bet. Kyle Kinzing, Athlon Sports. We'll take a break, come back, talk a little college football, some more soccer as well with the Kansas City location. We'll talk about those markets, plus get you the things you need to know next here in the program.